There's classical music, there's a classical education, and then there are classic books. One of those is How to Write and Publish a Scientific Paper that first appeared in 1979 and has undergone a number of subsequent editions. And joining us today from College Station, Texas, at Texas A&M University, is Barbara Gastel, who is the co-author of the latest edition. Barbara, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Thanks very much, Chris. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you and to have you back with us, because you were part of a very early Beyond the Book program back when the sixth edition came out. And so we wanted to catch up with you and find out what's new in the world of writing and publishing scientific papers, and also to talk about a related program that you're involved with called Author Aid. But first, I suppose the obvious question to start with is, what's changed since the last edition in 2006? How substantive is the change occurring in this field over the last half decade?
Well, I guess it's been about 5 years since the previous edition came out, and then about 30-plus years since the initial edition came out. And I think many of the basics have stayed the same, but also some things have changed. I think ever since the beginning, the basic organization of a scientific paper, introduction, methods, results, and discussion, generally in that order, has been pretty much the same. Also, what has been largely the same is what type of writing is suitable and effective in a scientific paper, and that is clear, concise, direct, readable writing. However, there have also been major changes, and I think they've been largely technological changes. One is word processing. The first edition, 1979, which came out just as I was graduating from medical school, had a chapter on how to type the manuscript. Some of the intermediate editions had sections on how to use a word processor, and now it's just assumed that everyone word processes manuscripts. Online journals have come along, and online content. Also, online submission. I think one thing that's different is for last edition, we were saying that online submission was something rather new and that the bugs were still sort of being worked out. Now, online submission for many, probably most journals, is the norm. Another thing is that scientific publication has become much more international, with people from more and more countries active in the field. And a third difference I see is there's been much more emphasis on the ethics of scientific publication.
Well, all those are terrific points, and I suppose the only place where technology is traveling at a faster pace than in the world of publishing is probably in the world of scientific research. And Barbara, you are especially able to talk about both sides of that. We should tell people that apart from a BA from Yale, you are an MD and have received the Master's of Public Health from Johns Hopkins. But right after medical school, you did an American Association for the Advancement of Science Mass Media Fellowship at Newsweek. So you're a doctor who's reported for Newsweek. You've also worked in communication and administration at the National Institutes of Health, taught science writing at MIT, and interestingly, and to your point about the global aspect of scientific writing these days, you spent 2 years as a visiting professor of technical communication at Beijing Medical University. So you really have, as I say, an expertise on both, you know, the research lab side, from the bench and from the desk as well. And so that's a fascinating combination and a fascinating opportunity to talk to you about all of this. You mentioned how ethics has become an increasingly important part of the book itself. Tell us about that. I know that when we talked for the first time back in 2006, ethics had gotten a chapter on its own. And I wonder, where has all that moved since then? And again, the overlap that I'm interested in, too, is about the ethics of writing and the ethics of research. Talk about that some.
Right. I think the two are very much intertwined. I think the ethics, the writing in ways reflects the ethics of research, and it's come a lot more to the fore. I think early editions did say some things about ethics of scientific writing, but it was often toward the end of the book, almost as an as an afterthought, but I think we realize now that really ethics is the foundation of scientific publication. So we have a separate chapter, and additional materials have come out on the topic since, and we note these materials. I know extremely good report or guide from the National Academies that we mentioned, and conveniently a new edition of that came out just shortly before the book, and we were able to cite that.
Right. Well, I wondered, too, whether it's the availability of all this scientific scientific information online and the perception that online is a world of free sharing is contributing to some of the confusion around what requires attribution, what defines plagiarism, and so forth and so on. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that that may well be so, because I think people so often are used to sort of cutting and pasting things for their own use and may not realize that that isn't appropriate in a publication. I think another aspect that may be contributing to it is the increasingly international and intercultural nature of science, because different cultures have different traditions about using material from other people's work, whereas, for example, in the United States, we tend to be very strict about attribution and credit. In some other cultures, there is not the same strong tradition in that regard.
Well, one of the chapters is about writing clearly across cultures and media. And tell us about the issues that you explore there. And you've had experience, real life experience, teaching in China. How did that experience shape your thinking for that section?
Right. I think actually my experiences in at least three contexts shaped my thinking. I taught for 2 years in China. I have been working with the Author Aid Project, which I'll discuss later. And in addition, I've done other work in China. And here in the United States, we have many graduate students who come from variety of countries and variety of linguistics backgrounds. And I think they have shaped this chapter and related chapters, such as the one on writing science in English as a foreign language, in a couple of ways. One way is that I've observed some of the areas in which people tend to have difficulty. The other thing is, as always, I have learned a great deal from my students, and I have seen the strategies that they use to communicate effectively about science in English in standard Western ways, and I've tried to share some of those strategies in the book, too.
Well, I think that's a fascinating process, Barbara, because I called the book a classic. In fact, it is. Anything that's been in constant print since 1979 pretty much defines that. And certainly it's an invaluable resource for people in the research community here and around the world. But what you're saying there is nothing standing still. You're learning even throughout your own career about how people communicate about scientific research, and it's changing. There is no way to sort of nail it to the ground. This is a moving target.
Definitely, very much so. In fact, I'm already taking notes for the next edition.
Well, that's a good writer, always thinking ahead. We are talking with Barbara Gastel, who is the co-author of How to Write and Publish a Scientific Paper, and the book divides neatly into one with instruction and guidance on how to write the various sections of a scientific paper, and the other part, which is just as important, it would be trees falling in the forest, nobody there to hear it, is to publish the paper. What are the challenges that scientists face when it comes to publication in 2011? And I suppose it just must be unrecognizable from that very first edition in 1979.
Yes, I think some of the challenges are the same, and I think some of the challenges are different. I mean, I think really the most basic challenge is the same as it always was, which is doing good research and thinking clearly about it. And writing publishably about science, I think, follows almost directly from that. I think one of the myths is that writing a scientific paper is a mysterious process. And in the book, ever since the first edition, the book has tried to demystify it. And I think once one knows the principles and knows to follow the instructions from journals, it's fairly straightforward. Yes, you know, it's hard work to write a scientific paper, but don't have to be a literary genius. I'd say that writing a scientific paper is much more like solving a puzzle than like writing poetry. And so it's the type of work that if one's a good scientist, one should be able to do. In fact, an interesting story about a course I taught using this book. Afterwards, one of the people taking the course came up to me and said that the course had really surprised him. He said he thought the course would be largely about the use of English. But he said, now I realize it's really a course in logic. And I think that, you know, that has been the case sort of all along for scientific writing. I think, though, the specifics really do differ today from in 1979, the technology. In fact, I was thinking back when you invited me to the days that the first edition of How to Write and Publish a Scientific Paper was published, and that was when I was a new medical school graduate working at the National Institutes of Health. In those days, I did my literature searches largely by hand, not by computer. I drafted my papers longhand and typed them on a typewriter. I checked printed galley proofs, and I distributed physical reprints. And clearly, you know, all that has, you know, changed, you know, tremendously through the use of computers. Yet, you know, still the basic structure of scientific articles and basics of good scientific writing style and the peer review process have stayed largely the same.
I mean, one of the things that's also changed with the online revolution is the new variety of publications that are there that are in many cases digital only, many of them available as open access publications. What difference has that made, do you think, in terms of the type of works that are being published today?
Right. I think certainly, more is being published. In some ways, it may be easier to get published, but in other ways, there is more competition to publish because more people are submitting things. I think people may be facing more difficult choices as to where to submit their papers. And in the book, we do try to provide some guidance regarding criteria for where to submit papers.
Well, you know, you mentioned several times in our conversation, Barbara, the global aspect of scientific publishing today. And so I want to ask you about the work you're doing with AuthorAid. You should tell us briefly what it's about. And what I understand is they're trying to help researchers in developing countries to publish and communicate and provide as well as some forum to discuss research itself. How did you become involved? And tell us about the project and who should join AuthorAid and how they might do it.
Thank you very much. Well, as probably has been clear, international teaching of scientific writing has long been an interest of mine. As mentioned, I taught scientific writing in China for 2 years in the 1980s. And then for about a decade, beginning in the mid-1990s, I led the U.S. aspect of a project to teach biomedical writing and editing at various universities in China and elsewhere. And it was interesting, in writing the proposal for the project, we said that it could be a model for broader such efforts encompassing more fields of research and more countries. And in a way, AuthorAid is that. In fact, around the time the project was winding down, two editors at a journal came up with the idea for AuthorAid, which was largely to use the internet to help researchers in developing countries to learn more about how to write and publish their work. That was about 5 years ago, and pretty much simultaneously, I became aware of the author aid idea, and the originators of the idea became aware of me and contacted me. And then I was very lucky to be part of the team that established the author aid project starting in 2007. And I've become increasingly involved and have enjoyed it very much. With regard to who should join AuthorAid and how, AuthorAid has been intended primarily for two groups, but I think can also be of interest and help to others. It is targeted mainly to help researchers, especially those in developing countries, who want to know more about how to write about and publish their work. But as one of my Japanese colleagues said to me, when it comes to scientific writing, every country is a developing country. Mm-hmm. And so I think can help researchers in many places. And others group it's intended for is people who can provide mentorship through AuthorAid. These are often researchers who are experienced in publishing, and also professional editors who are willing to volunteer some of their time. It also may be of interest and use to others. I know the AuthorAid community includes teachers of scientific writing and others interested in the subject. I should say most of the AuthorAid material, for example, our research source library and our blog, is openly accessible at the AuthorAid website, which is www.authoraid, all one word, .info. But people can also join through this site, and by joining, there are additional benefits. One can participate in mentoring, either as a mentee or mentor, can participate in the AuthorAid discussion list, and also receive notification every time there's a new blog post, which these days is about three times a week.
Well yeah. And in fact, I was exploring the website just the other day and saw an entry that you made in the blog with an interesting question that relates to our discussion about AuthorAid as well as to your book, Barbara, and that is about the need for a native speaker to be involved in a manuscript editing and so forth. And so I'll just say that you were writing about it. It says, this week an international guest told me a common story. She said that when she submits papers, journal editors often say, please have your manuscript edited by a native English speaker and then resubmit it. And, you know, so you asked the question, is it necessary for a manuscript editor to be a native speaker? And you've got a fascinating answer for that.
I guess my answer is it's not necessary. It is necessary for the editor to be knowledgeable about scientific writing and to have excellent English. But there are many non-native speakers of English who are terrific editors and have helped people greatly. And on the other hand, there are some people who are native speakers of English, and either their English isn't all that great or they don't know how a journal article should be written. So my feeling is the important thing is that the person have a strong command of English and of scientific writing, but one's native language doesn't matter.
Well, I also know that from personal experience that when you're speaking in a language not your first language, you take extra care. You want to be sure that you're communicating clearly, you get it right. If it's in the written form rather than the oral form, you want to spell all the words properly. And so I may actually pay more attention to my French than I do to my English.
I think that's true. In fact, I had someone who took a summer workshop from me, and she said that her journal articles in English, even though her native language is Spanish, her English language journal articles are better for that exact reason. She says she really thinks very carefully about how they're written, and they end up being more focused and better articles.
Well, I think we'll all be thinking more carefully about what we write in our research or in whatever writing we do. We've been chatting with Barbara Gastel, who is the co-author of the new seventh edition for How to Write and Publish a Scientific Paper, just out from ABC Clio. And Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today on Beyond the Book.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back, and thank you for joining us again. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes and at our website, copyright.com/Beyond the Book. Our engineer today is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.